have 60 seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is minute 39.
Part man.
Part machine.
All part.
This minute begins with Miller forcing the judge to stand and ends with... Oh, shit, I backspaced it. What? How did that fucking... Jesus Christ, Courtney, what operation am I running here?
It ends with stay out of trouble.
And ends with another new segment.
Yeah, that's funny. It's, yes, the first media break since, was it minute three?
So, yeah.
We've actually gone like a full half hour without this plot device, which is pretty cool, actually.
It's been a while.
My first comment was RoboCop breaking down the walls of injustice.
Yes. My first note was about that, but it was just like, RoboCop looks so fucking cool. It's so fucking cool. It's great and it's awesome. It's totally radical. I don't have anything constructive to say. I just think it's cool.
It is a really cool minute, and it's also that thing of like, RoboCop don't give no fuck.
Yeah, he is clearly... He doesn't think about risks, apparently. Because he grabs Miller, his semi-automatic weapon goes off. Bullets fly everywhere, missing the judge by inches. And it's just, I don't think that was a consideration in RoboCop's plan. He was just like, well, there he is, grab him, pull him out. And that's all you need.
Well, going back to the whole hostage thing discussion from like previous minutes, like risk assessment is part of the process. It's like, you essentially want to try and get the... maximum effect, like subduing the guy or potentially killing the guy with the least amount of casualties.
Well, unless it's Vladimir Putin dealing with terrorists. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's another fun story. I don't know if you... Maybe we have time. Yeah, it's pretty short. I'm reading this from Crack.
Yeah, go on.
Russian special forces came up with an idea. Put everyone to sleep with knockout gas. Only problem was, knockout gas doesn't exist. Most gases that induce unconsciousness do so merely as a preamble to killing you. After all, even carefully crafted anesthesia stands a good chance of shutting down your body if the dosage isn't just right. But by day four, the terrorists had started execution, so Vladimir Putin gave the order to unleash the gas. Reports of the time called it a secret chemical agent, but people today might recognize the name. It was a variant of fentanyl. Fentanyl. There we go.
Fentanyl.
Yes, it was a variant of fentanyl. Don't make me a chemist. I can't fucking say big words. The gas entered the auditorium through the air conditioning system, and it put a fair percentage of those people inside out of commission and allowed special forces to successfully take control. The official story at the time called the mission a total success. 10 hostages died in the crossfire, but everyone else made it, and authorities even managed to take the terrorists in alive. That story soon fell apart. The truth was that 50 terrorists had died, not too many tears were shed of them, and reporters saw hostages vomiting and choking as they entered the evacuation buses. Authorities refused to identify the gas for doctors, so no one knew how to treat the patients.
How to treat it.
In the days after the siege, this is horrific, 120 hostages died from the effects of the gas.
Oh, fuck.
So if you count everyone who died in the next year, the number rises to over twice that. Some of the survivors put together a lawsuit, so the closest thing this ordeal has to a conclusion, the European Court of Human Rights is telling Russia to pay $2 million to 64 plaintiffs. Holy shit.
Ruthless Russian efficiency.
Wow. I mean, I guess it got the job done, but that is horrendous. Like, if you survived that, and then over the next couple of years, you think, wow, any time now, I'll die. Jesus. Wow.
Yeah.
Good job, Russia.
Oh, Jesus. And the thing was, you just know if... fucking Putin had just actually gone, yeah, we gassed them with this, they would probably be fine. Like, I'm not an organic chemist or anything, I don't know how this works in the body and if it has like a time period where it could actually be negated, but just simply just letting someone know, even if it's just in secret, getting all the hostages, putting them in a secret hospital and just treating them for this shit,
yeah,
probably not a bad idea.
Oh my god,
wow, I was not expecting that. Wow.
So, RoboCop, by comparison,
yes,
not looking so not bad. I mean, maybe one guy would have been shot. Worst case scenario, you know? Not so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you could probably make the argument, well, why didn't he just point the gun towards the wall and shoot through and blast the guy in the head? But yeah, again, you've got, muscle spasms. That's the word I'm trying to form.
Yeah.
That could trigger things. So probably best to just kind of make this guy go, what the fuck? And, you know, he's never met a robot guy before, so, yeah.
Use the principle of surprise.
Yes.
Element of surprise, that's a word.
I do love when Robo, blasts him through the window and the camera people just, like, follow him out to the ground.
Yes.
That is just, like, peak media. You just know that's what they would do.
Oh, I had an observation. So the windows, the glass is obviously being smashed out, but it's got this weird effect. And I was like, what am I looking at? Is that it looked like wallpaper. It really did look like, a very deliberate pattern. And no idea what that is.
The glass has already been smashed for some reason. There's dust all over the place. Oh, no, because it gets broken. It's pre-broken! Yeah, it's pre-broken!
Hang on.
Okay, so sometimes in special effects, what you don't want is glass that breaks because you can have shards. Because basically, this is like safety glass, kind of like you get an automotive glass. So it's if it breaks, it breaks in very small pieces, so it doesn't get it doesn't hurt anyone, doesn't turn into sharp shards. That's why when people break into cars, you can just dust the things off. And that's why they're trying to keep it. It's like pre-broken. Don't quote me 100% on this, but it's like pre-broken and kind of like the film and stuff like that tends to hold the tension together, so it's still sturdy. But once that tension breaks, it just goes.
All right, and for those listening, it looks like rings within rings, basically. So it almost like a wallpaper pattern.
So, interesting side note. So in The Matrix, when Trinity smashes onto the wall, when she's on the helicopter? Yeah,
yes.
Either one. When Trinity smashes onto the wall and there's the webbing pattern on the glass, they achieve that by pre-breaking the glass, re-putting it back together with, the film.
Yeah.
So when the stunt person hits the window on the shot, it broke in that specific pattern. It's a safe way to have glass. So, yeah, this looks pre-broken, and weirdly enough, we actually see the shatter before it shatters. How is that for some obscure knowledge coming up?
Yeah, it's very handy you knew we have the answer. I was looking at that going, am I tripping balls? I have no answer for this.
No, because you could kind of get away with it if the other glass looked frosted or something like that. But no, the other glass pane looks fine. And yeah, that one is just... It's only a frame, but if you look on the 17 seconds, and I think it's because the light's hitting it in such a way that the spotlight, I think that's just making it look like it looks pre-broken. And it's definitely safety glass, because as soon as you see him jump out, it shatters into... Normal window panes don't do that.
Shatter a million pieces.
Yeah, if you look at the other office window, how it's got perfectly cracked and it's shaped, it's safety glass.
Do we reckon that this RoboCop costume here is like a stunt version, so it's got foam instead of fiberglass?
As far as I'm aware... There was only one complete costume like this. There probably was a stunt one, so yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because about 16 seconds in, where you see a reverse shot over his shoulder, the color looks totally different to the rest of, especially comparing the helmet to the costume.
It is covered in dust from the wall.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, is that just because of the dust? It's very matte looking. I mean, things on camera can be very deceptive, but it also seems to have so much more flex and bend, like he's able to wind up and do a full proper punch. I don't think...
Yes! Now I'm looking at... Oh, hang on. I wonder if he's actually got his full arm on.
And also, the chess piece seems a little bigger and looser. As he's, when he punches through the wall and you see a shot from his back, it seems to wobble around a little bit more than it conventionally does.
Yeah, the shot through the wall looks actually very rubbery.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think you're onto something. I think the punch version is either a chopped down version or, yeah, it's a stunt so I can get a rubbery kind of thing going.
Yeah, because you look closely on his costume normally.
Sorry for the clacks.
It always goes up into... There's this black piece under the arm that goes right up into the armpit.
Yes, I just noticed that.
There is no room for shoulder articulation. So the way the camera's placed, the punching arm is furthest from camera. So yeah, they could have taken out a whole heap of that costume just for that shot.
I think that's probably what they did. I think we're probably seeing a bit of the undersuit there as well. So yeah, nice spot.
This is my costume designer history coming into play.
Nice. Shall we just get to media break and start talking about the kids?
Ah, yes. I love it. So Robocop's walking along. He's out of school, obviously, and these kids are falling behind him. And he spins around real fast, and the kids are, oh! Yeah, and it's so cute. I love it.
I know. I love how there's, like, the little girl is the first one to go up to Robocop and kind of that thing that... I love it when kids do this, that thing where their eyes and their tactile touch are almost separate, so they have to kind of touch it to make sure it's real.
Oh, I was
object permanence.
As a kid, I was definitely, had to physically hold everything and inspect everything, and it drove my mom nuts, because especially when you're in a public place where you're not supposed to do that, up other people's houses.
I don't know if it's just a thing we just evolve out of as we grow up, but as we're adults, I think it's one of those things where we see something in real life, we don't have this thing of, like, do we trust our own senses? We tend to just go, yep, that's the thing we see in real life.
I guess we get used to it. Although, now I've been collecting Hot Wheels, I've found that there is this real tactile sense that's coming back.
Mm.
And it's just, I want to know what this one feels like, and I want to know what this one feels like when you push it along the desk or, you know, whatever it is. Or just inspecting all the details.
When I'm building, I love tactile. I love the tactile sensation of the materials I'm working with, and that's why I really hate wearing gloves for that reason.
Yeah, I wonder if artists are a little bit more tactile in that sense.
Could be. No, I actually think, like, I think also people, like, you know, maybe like neurodivergence and stuff like that, we also tend to... I don't like wearing certain fabrics because, you know, itchiness, uncomfortability. So, you know, I think when I'm building a costume, I don't like buying material online because I want to be able to feel the fabric and feel if I'm going to have an issue with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some polyesters are just diabolical.
Yeah. So I can't go into a fabric shop and not touch the rolls of fabric because I need to have piece of information in my brain.
That's the best part. Yeah, buying fabric online is just miserable. Buying fabric in store, you can't stop me. You got to hold me back.
So yeah, it's always a thing that I find is very interesting, both from, you know, being like doing Santa photography, doing charity costuming and stuff like that. Like kids, a lot of kids, not all of them, but some kids will just not make up their mind upon you until they've touched you. And I think sometimes even parents kind of cotton onto that. So, like, you know, shake his hand, say hello, you know, give you a high five. And then sometimes the kids will just be like, nope, don't want to do that. And so, like, how about I give mom a high five? Or how about I give dad a high five?
That's a good point. I was just thinking, I think maybe socially in our culture, we kind of train kids out of touch. Mm. But you look at uncontacted tribes or, you know, very traditional tribes, and when someone new shows up, they kind of all swarm around. They're all, you know, handshakes or any kind of, that's how they greet them, each other or whatever it is. Yeah, it seems to be just maybe our culture is definitely downplayed physical contact, which, you know, makes sense. If you live in a city, you know, COVID obviously has made us very aware. It's very difficult to have a dense population, as is the case in most modern cities, and stay healthy and hygienic.
Mm. Yeah, germ spreading. I was gonna say germ warfare.
Germ warfare, yeah. Warfare.
The general, theory of germinology. I don't know what it's called. But gen theory. Just gen theory is like, yeah, it's a lot of it is spread through touch, and but you know.
Whereas if you live in a tribe of 100 people and you've lived with those 100 people your whole life, it's probably gonna be fine.
Yeah, it's us disgusting Westerners who spread this stuff.
Yes, I mean, especially once we built cities, and then we had livestock living in those cities, and then we're walking through the streets with animal shit literally all over the road. I'm like, yeah, I wonder how this happened.
Yeah, it's amazing, and the sad truth is that we tend to ruin uninhabited. Or,
yeah, isn't it funny? Like, the fucking British people come over to America or Australia, beautiful, pristine landscape. The natives were living in such harmony. They were so wise. They knew the land so well. Then our ancestors were just like fucking savages. We will give them civilization, which includes the bubonic plague. I don't know.
Well, you know, you're saying about untouched tribes and stuff like that. Yeah, literally, people now realize this. That's why they still remain untouched, is because they have no immune system that can deal with our fucking just germs that live on us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't go near them. Literally, just avoid.
Yeah, they're basically aliens in quarantine.
Yeah, like, you know, let them be peaceful. Let them just live their lives. So just think of even not touching, we can still corrupt these people, because I always think of cargo cults.
Oh, I was thinking of the gods must be crazy, dropping the Coke bottle.
The gods must be crazy are essentially cargo, is a cargo cult.
Oh, it is. Oh, I didn't know. Yeah.
So in the gods must be crazy, the whole thing is about, I haven't seen the second one, but I haven't seen the first one in a long time, but it's all about the Coke bottle and, you know, becomes this holy symbol and stuff like that. So in real life, cargo cults started to occur when, like, you know, like Americans and that were landing on these quote unquote uninhabited islands and shit like that. And they were setting up bases to deploying for like warfare, for like different campaigns and shit like that. So they'd set up a base and then they'd fly over these islands. And all of a sudden there's these people that had never seen a plane before, and they're seeing all this shit happening. And they think it's the new gods. Or at least the new religious figure. So they started building fake airstrips so the god plane could land on their island.
Oh my god.
This is the simplified version of that. It's a lot more complex. But yeah, this is the thing. People, this is why like the Arthur C. Clarke quote is really poignant. You know,
yeah.
Magic is just technology behind our comprehension. So, which people ruin constantly. I hate it. But yeah, that's because, you know, people see these miraculous things and then sometimes they want a piece of that, so they'll build an altar for that god. That's essentially how you get religion. But we go, oh, how quaint. But that's what, you know, 6,000 years ago when the first Hebrew decided to create a shrine to Yahweh.
Yahweh. That's Aboriginal.
I would love it if they did that.
Yes. So what you're saying is, if in another time, Mysterio would have been the most powerful motherfucker in the galaxy.
Pretty much, yeah. You mean he isn't already?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's funny how Homecoming actually made Mysterio cool.
Yeah.
I don't know how they managed that.
Actually, I think it is because they grounded it more in science fiction and more relevant technology and social issues. That movie had a lot to say about that. Funny how themes are important.
Sorry, Far From Home for the internet commentators. I said Homecoming, not Far From Home.
Far From Home. Yeah. Funny how putting a theme, you know, thematic elements, subtext in your movie actually makes a huge difference to how it's remembered and what impact it has. Do we want to talk about Gaslighting Robocop?
I do have a few more things. Oh, okay. I'm just
God, that was such a good segue, though.
Yeah, but I got some commentary notes. So going back to the hostage crisis.
Sorry, Edgar's... I just realized that my last note was between the newscasters. What the hell is that?
What?
There's a black thing between the newscasters on the desk.
Let me just look.
53 seconds in.
I never noticed. What the fuck?
Yeah, I just noticed now.
What? Was that in the previous shots? What the?
It was there all along, but what is it?
Is it trying to suggest that the back is a projector? Because there's like a coiled cord there.
It's like a telephone missile.
Yeah, I think it's a can of radioactive waste from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Ah, ooze.
Is the secret of the ooze. I have no idea. I just kind of blanked it because I'm usually looking at the backdrop at the guerrilliers in the background.
Guerrilliers, yes.
The guerrilliers. So Ed goes on about how this is the way you solve all hostage problems. I keep wanting to bring this up because it's actually a really fun analytical tool. So there's a theory called Punctum and Studium. It's by Roland Barthes, who is like pretty much one of the big daddies in symbology. What the fuck's it?
Semiotics?
Semiotics, that's the word.
That librarianship degree was worth something.
Yeah. So Punctum and Studium is essentially, Studium is the whole, or like you analyzing the whole. What we tend to do is essentially Punctum. We are looking at a specific thing and analyze it. But Punctum tends to also be very personal. So you just had a great example there of Punctum because you seen this scene and your brain went to that thing that's on that table and you focused in on that, whereas I wasn't paying attention to that. So that's a handy little bit of lesson for you of Punctum and Studium.
Well, there you go. We've learned something today.
And in the commentary... Ed loves to point out that if you watch the actual body of Miller flying out of the instant replay, he bounces at the bottom of the screen. So if you go back to second 21, you can actually see about second 22, you actually see his legs bounce up. And that's because there's obviously an airbag underneath, but that's supposed to be like it's a story or two up.
Oh, yeah!
So, they don't mention this as a mistake. That's just Ed loves to point this out. And as soon as I was like, hang on, he shouldn't be bouncing that high.
And you know what? They could have very easily fixed that if you just freeze frame, because there's a nice clean plate there. Why would you just not have a nice clean plate? It's right there, guys.
I know, obviously they just used the same footage. Because you remember, the cameraman tilted down as he flew to his death.
That's going to bug me forever now. We've ruined this movie.
I love it.
When it comes to Robocop, because it is so satirical, I think those kind of goofs are fine.
Yeah. I love it. Ed points... So the other thing is, apparently... in the school round scene, it was shot by Paul, and apparently him and the kids had a lot of fun that day, which is what I love. The retort by John Davison is, they're the only people that had fun. I don't think Peter Weller was probably having particular fun, but that's probably just because of that damn suit.
Oh man, it'd be wonderful if we could track down one of the kids from that scene. So what was that like? I guess they just rounded off a heap of kids, because I don't think they're actor kids, so you don't need actors. It's just, hey...
They probably just went to a local school and just went, hey kids, who wants to go and see a robot
man? A robot man, yes.
Like, they would have had no context to what they were shooting either.
No, they wouldn't even know it was Robocop. Maybe many, many years later when they grew up and they saw the post, like, oh shit.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I love that, yeah. I love that as well. It's just that thing of, it's funny how it kind of... almost predicts like the amount of love that kids would have for Robocop. And I don't think it was intended.
No, it's just they've made unintentionally a very child-friendly costume. And I think part of that is due to how they've simplified his face. You know, a lot of children love Spider-Man because it's yeah. just these big, cute, cartoony eyes and nothing else. And you look at Robocop, and there's no nose, there's no eyes, which are perhaps some of the most detailed parts of the face. And I think I remember reading somewhere, or at least autistic children, but I think children in general, focus a lot more on the mouth and the eyes when communicating. So, I think they're unintentionally perfect face that kids are going to love.
I just realized something. It's interesting you say it, because, like, it's just one big black slit on his face, so you never know where he's looking.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that is a psychological advantage in a this thing of, like, you know, he's staring down the thug, and the thug doesn't know where he's looking at, especially with the targeting. Oh my god, that is brilliant.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and even just to make it more appealing to kids, it's weird how the less complicated the facial features, the more friendly it appears. And I don't know whether robotics design comes up against this a lot, where you don't want the Uncanny Valley. We all know the Uncanny Valley. And it just seems like if you just have this cute little Baymax face with just eyes and a line, that's it. It's just, it's the cutest thing, and it's not threatening in any way.
It's also really interesting just thinking about it. Robocop's shape is very simplistic. You know, it's exaggerated. It's an exaggerated body. It's got a ton of detail, but it's very simplistic.
It looks like the kinds of cars you'd find in about the 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
Very curvy. There is detail, but it flows kind of chunky, but not really. Yeah.
Yeah. This reminds me very much of Silhouette when it comes to animation and character design. You want a silhouette that sells the character.
And that is a great silhouette. You would know that anywhere. Especially those leg details, a lot of little pistons on the back of his leg.
This is why I love, say, like, you know, the original Transformers, the G1 designs are silhouetted. They're brilliant. You can almost tell exactly what that character is just from silhouette. That's kind of one of the reasons I hate the Bayformers ones, because they're full of jaggedy edges.
Starscream was the only one that I thought they did something interesting with.
I really can't remember what Starscream is.
It's kind of simian silhouette. So they were trying to, because a jet is enormous, they were trying to mass distribute in such a way that was realistic, but also not making him huge. And it worked.
Another simplistic design, because I want to get it in there, is I love the simplistic design of the first Enterprise.
Well, shit. That's exactly what I was hoping to spare you from.
It's just, it's just a couple of tubes and a disc.
That is so iconic. That is the most iconic spaceship. And props to them doing the TNG, the Enterprise D. Still, you know, it keeps a lot of that. You don't lose the silhouette, the iconic shape.
And you get some ships that are just like overly complicated and fussy, and you just go, I just have no love for it. So yeah, keep it simple. And we've segued pretty hard there, but I don't care. I love it.
Yeah, well, I think it's relevant. We're learning. That's what these Movies by Minute, well, at least for me, Movies by Minute podcast should be about, learning about the finer details of design and filmmaking and all that. Because I studied fashion design and costume design. Well, before that, I was really into animation and graphic design and stuff. So I learned about silhouettes and keeping it simple.
Yeah.
And so for a long time, I didn't use prints at all. I was all about the silhouette. I was very... but that actually gave me kind of a weird advantage. Although it was limiting me a little bit. You know, I'm breaking out of those habits now. I'm less afraid of prints. But I think in terms of creating these unique looks or having a bold vision, always sticking to a limited color palette, having a very distinct silhouette, no other fashion designer that I was studying with was thinking in those terms. They're all about the details.
Like, details can be great. Details should only be there to enhance the form.
Yes.
And I think that's why Robocop really does work as well, is that it's such a simplistic form, and all those details do is just really add to that form.
Yeah. And that's the principle of good design across the board. It's not about adding a million things. I've seen many student designers do that. No, if you have a real good shape, nice, smooth, good, yes. stick to that.
Well, it's funny because this was before the industry, in the movie industry particularly, got really heavily into toyification.
Oh, yeah, toyetic.
And this is something that we could probably discuss in length in future movies, or probably when we guest on a particular podcast with a particular And Robin.
Yes.
And the toyification of design and how it, they didn't strive for something kid friendly. They just strive for something really interesting, unique, and sleek. But it's so kid friendly. And we see it here.
Mm.
So yeah, just something to think about. It's like unintentional kid friendliness is. But I guess when you're trying to make a cop, you kind of on a propaganda level, you kind of want it to be family friendly on a design level.
Yeah, and I never thought about that until we got up to this minute. Of course he's made to be appealing to the public. There was probably there's a scene we didn't see where Bob Morton is like, yeah, but how does it rate with the, you know, under 15s? And how does it, how's it rating with women and all of that? Which they kind of do in the remake. Yeah, sorry. It was sort of that scene with Keaton in the remake.
I forgot about that. So there is a novelization, and it's, I think it was supposed to be what this scene was originally intended to be. It was that it was Morton, I think Dick Jones was there, weirdly enough, but it was like the security concepts at the school almost field testing. What's the term? Like doing market research. Market researching RoboCop around students, and it's all about them taking notes on how Robo is reacting or being reacted to by the kids. And there's a line here is, company want to merchandise the shit out of Robo. Robo toys, Robo dolls, Robo suits, Robo sheets, comics, guns, games, even a Saturday morning cartoon. Do you realize how much money he can bring into the corporation? Not only be the most efficient crime deterrent in the world, he'll be the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
So sadly, that's a bit of commentary that's not in this film, but it's in the novelization. So it's clear they were thinking about these things at some point. There's also a missing scene that's in the novelization, but it feels like padding, which is a scene with Jan Murphy, and she's like putting away Alex's clothes as they're getting packing up to move to the moon. Or is it moon or Mars? It's one of the two.
Is that connected to Total Recall?
No, I think it's in the original novelization, and it's in the thing. Yeah, the Murphys, the son and the wife, as they're known as, are supposed to have moved out to the moon colony. That's why they're not in this house later on.
That's so bizarre. Isn't that strange that, you know, it is kind of close thematically to Total Recall. And yeah, no, the idea that you could go to Mars totally breaks the illusion for me. And I'm wondering if maybe that's because it is supposed to be so, so much a commentary in our world that the moment you start adding the, and even though, you know, we are probably not too far away from colonizing Mars, it's just, it's adding too much, or it's a hat on a hat kind of thing. I don't know.
Well, I think the thing is, in regards to RoboCop, because so much of it is based on 80s Detroit, or at least 80s crime-ridden city scope. Having a plot line where it's like, oh yeah, we just colonized the moon, it just makes it a little bit too outlandish.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can do outlandish things, but if it's really effective if you keep it based in reality. Like, Total Recall is a whole thing about memories and concepts, and it's as much of a power fantasy as it is a commentary on perception. But that's the point. It's a power fantasy. Your main character is Arnold freaking Schwarzenegger in that movie.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're not really meant to relate to him. We're supposed to impose ourselves onto him. I think Murphy's a lot more relatable, even, you know, that's the point of him being before he became RoboCop.
Yeah.
We relate to the guy, so the trauma he goes through, we go through.
Mm.
Speaking of not very good trauma.
All right. Gaslighting RoboCop.
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
So, this minute begins with Murphy running out of batteries and ends with him going sleepy night-eyes.
I really want to see the scene when they shove a whole lot of double A's up his butt.
Yeah, but they don't really explain he's just like, I gotta go, and then he falls asleep, and then the next scene, he's got all his blood being filtered, and I just...
Why?
So, they're implying, well, wouldn't there be, like, an alarm or something, or this would be regularly scheduled? They don't explain why he got to this stage. Did he run out of blood oxygen? Wouldn't that kill him?
Well, that's... Again, going to the stupidity of having him have so many organs that require blood that needs to be filtered. So why didn't they give him a liver? Well, then why didn't they give him an approximate of a liver? And
yeah, why is he not able to filter things by himself?
Yes, it's like, cause imagine if he's on patrol and all of a sudden he's like, oh shit, I need to go boopsie down, bye bye, because my blood count is bad. And also, we've seen what his internal organs look like.
Hmm.
Why is there so much blood now?
So, like, where is that blood? Is that...
Is it in a tank?
I don't know.
What the fuck?
Because otherwise, yeah, when we show the interior with his brain and the lungs, would that not be completely covered? I don't know, because I've skinned animals before. And when you skin animals, there's actually surprisingly not that much blood. A lot of it will tend to pool in one spot, and that's it. But that's once the animal's dead. I don't know. It's kind of hard to imagine what it looks like while it's still alive, but...
Splurting?
Yeah. I mean, it's generally inside the organs, or it's within, just subdermally.
Well, blood clotting is a thing itself as well, and... They're pumping a lot out of him and a lot into him, and I'm just remembering back to literally 2 minutes ago, where it's just like... There's hardly anything there for blood to be in.
Yeah, but also it went so dark. Like,
yeah,
you let it get to that stage without clearing out the blood. Jesus Christ! Like, that's wow. This is a really bad design, guys. Why would you just not make artificial organs so it could do the job? I mean, you already said that, but yeah.
Yeah, I get it that, like, you know, we're still in the prototyping stage. Yeah, but. With cinematic language, unless you make it explicit that, like, this is still a prototype, or, you know, the visual design of RoboCop maybe is a bit more stripped down to indicate they're still working on it or something like that.
Yeah.
We just assume this is the norm.
Yeah, that would actually be interesting if they do show the technology's not perfect, we've never done this before, these are the shortcomings. For me, at least personally, that would have made it feel... Yeah. Maybe even more intense. It makes it more risky and scary and unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah, like...
Play up the body horror. Make this fucking Cronenberg's RoboCop, please.
And I don't recall this coming back up at any other time. Like, maybe this could be the setup for later on, where it's just like, when RoboCop is trying to resist, and it's like, well, you kind of have to do what we say, because we're the ones that are going to give you your blood.
Man, could you imagine Cronenberg directing RoboCop, and this is a scene where he's fucking his wife for like 10 minutes, and talking about Lewis's butthole, like, just deadpan for like 10 minutes. It's great.
I want to see anything but this kind of dredge. Even if it's like Cronenberg butchering the legacy of RoboCop by making the most fucked up version, would be interesting.
Yeah, no, I want a big swing and a miss. Absolutely, I think the worst thing, and I'm not the first person to say this, but the worst thing a story can be is boring. You know, it's, and I, especially when I watch 80s TV, what I love about it is that more often than not, it just goes buck wild. Like, the bad episodes are generally not boring, they're just fucking insane. And that's why I love it. Whereas I think, you know, you get further through television, 90s, 2000s, modern day, it's a lot of boring shit. It's trying to be so serious. It's like, no, I want to smell your desperation, and I want you to just throw UFOs into Miami Vice in season 4 for no fucking reason.
Well, this is where, like, you know, so a lot of thing I don't like about American TV is that it's all formulaic. It's like they develop a formula, and that's the formula they use for now until the end of time.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, setup, payoff, blah, 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 you know, act, structure, whatever. But every episode of a series usually has a formula they go through. So it's almost fun watching like terrible episodes to see where they try to change the formula or things, trying to do something weird and wonderful. And most of the time it doesn't work, but at least it's interesting.
Mm. And when it comes to a science fiction concept like RoboCop, I think why we get so frustrated with this remake is that, well, there's just so many avenues. But I think that's why I want to keep talking about it.
Mm.
Because as we get further in, we just go, oh, but what if we did this? Oh, what if we did that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, okay. We're now, God, 30, almost 40 episodes in. And I did jokingly do this as like my penance. I just threw it away because I do think this is a very throwawayable movie.
Mm.
As an analytical tool, I like discussing bad media. I don't like doing armchair directing for the most part. I don't think it's productive because most armchair directors don't know what they're talking about. They're just like, well, this movie would have been better if it had more tits or something like that. Yep. And I'm like, no, this movie has basic story problems and editing problems and directing problems,
and also it's such a, it typifies a lot of the problems in modern Hollywood. So yeah, it's a really nice vehicle for discussion on that.
And particularly because it is a remake of a phenomenally well-made film, it just highlights it so much more.
For me, at this minute, I think what they're presenting is quite interesting, that you're seeing what does it actually take to keep a man alive when there is just brain and lungs and a few other things. And there is a horror there, and I wish they played up that horror more. Because, in this minute, it's like he's just the chemical elements. Broken down to the most base elements that make a human, but the ingredients, and he's even like, I'll give him an antidepressant, Norton.
Yeah, it's just Gary Oldman just talking script with his assistant talking script. There's no conversation happening. There's no plot details coming up.
Yeah, it'd be nice if he was like, my God, it's so inhuman, or something like that, just talking about, these are all the chemical elements we're pumping into his body. And then also controlling his mood. Oh, they give him antidepressants. Because his brain is just a chemistry experiment now.
Or maybe go into Morton actually being this Frankensteinian character where he's like, he's created this monster and he's reveling in it.
Yeah.
Give us something, movie!
Well, I like the fact that he's sort of the antithesis of Bob Morton. So Norton is this more ethical doctor who's been roped into a situation he's not happy with.
Yeah.
So that would have been a really interesting character, a supporting character to explore that in a scene like this. Maybe have him alone. Don't even have the assistant, but you have him kind of talking to the sleeping RoboCop.
Mm.
And just, you can see how much this is just killing him. He feels like this is so wrong. But, you know,
you could go either way. You could have had the remorseful doctor, the guy who is... like, done this terrible thing. But I like the angle where he's done this terrible thing and he kind of acknowledges it, but he kind of likes it.
Yeah, so what makes, and this is what I've learned with writing recently, Patrick Willems actually, in a recent video, I can't remember which one it was, I think it was about endings.
Yeah.
But he talks about the three things that make a story compelling. And you have your physical stakes, you have your emotional stakes, and you have your philosophical stakes.
Mm.
And the original RoboCop pretty much hits all of those beats, I'd say. Whereas this one, you don't have that. And if the more characters, it's not always required, but the more characters you have those emotional stakes or the philosophical stakes, the more those characters come to life and the more you relate to them. You know, this is Gary Oldman, fantastic actor, and I think the character has a lot of potential there. He's put in a very high stakes situation, but they don't do anything with it.
Yeah. That's it. You can hire the greatest actor of all time. The actor can also realistically put in so much as well. Like, but at the end of the day, if the script isn't doing anything, the story isn't doing anything, or like, you know,
it can't move by force of acting alone.
You know, yeah, like, you could replace Gary Oldman with Tommy Wiseau, and it probably would end up the same.
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
Because there's nothing propelling the narrative forward, and you might get a giggle from, oh, hi, RoboCop, but that's not going to take you far enough in the movie.
Hmm.
Well, okay, maybe it would. But at least it'd be interesting.
We'll give him a nice dream.
Oh, hi, I'm going to give you a nice dream with some antidepressants, huh?
Oh, I heard you're not feeling so happy.
We're going to swap out your blood.
Funny story.
Okay. We can Robocop remake starring Tommy Wiseau as every role.
Yeah, you know, that would certainly improve things. But yeah, I think this what ultimately we're missing in this minute is those stakes. You know, there's a lot of potential in this particular minute where, okay, so he's run out of power. Like, how does that, what, has he lost consciousness? Like, is his human parts affected? How does that work? Does he go into, like, this safe power dynamic? It's never explained, and I think that would have been fun. And also just showing the horror of that, that, oh, right, he's almost disabled in a sense, that from now on he's got, like, this narcolepsy or something that, can't wander too far away from the lab, you're trapped.
Yeah, it's almost like every single time this movie gets close to doing something interesting or provocative or thought-provoking or philosophical, it takes a complete left turn into bland.
It does feel like it's being held back a lot, and I'm wondering at what point on the chain there, chain of command, how did that happen? Is it just the producers going, just keep it simple, just keep it really simple?
Yeah.
Or is it director just not being interested? I mean, we haven't really watched or listened to any audio commentaries or special features or anything, because we don't hate ourselves, and we don't have access to that. But yeah, it would mean we'd have to buy a Blu-ray, fuck.
The sad truth is, like, I've tried to watch every minute of this remake as we've been going along. And for the most part, I just find myself skipping along. And I think, okay, man, oh shit, did I just miss something? And I go back and rewatch and went, no.
Now, I do find interesting things here and there, but it's mostly going, oh, that could have been interesting.
Yes. The movie in our minds is better than the movie we're watching.
Yes. And we're not even trying that hard.
No!
But yeah, my final note for this minute is that the final shot reminds me a lot of the Meet Walter commercial that was used for Alien Covenant, directed by Luke Scott, Ridley Scott's son.
I don't think I've seen that
yet. It's fairly obscure. It's beautifully shot, though, and just makes me feel like, as much as the Meet Walter commercial is nice, it's just sci-fi aesthetics have not changed, you know, this intense, white, minimal, large spaces. We're kind of stuck in that 2001 A Space Odyssey future, and it's never gone away. Even fucking Teslas look like they're from the 2001 kind of Apple, iPod future, yeah.
Looks like they're from fucking Halo.
Yep.
Well, that's the funny thing is, like, the style of science fiction has kind of gone from grunge to clean to...
Well, it's either Star Wars or Star Trek. We go from one extreme to the other.
Clean to grunge, the clean to grunge, the clean to grunge, with no real in between, or like, you know, I think that's kind of why it's hard to kind of sometimes think of RoboCop the original as a sci-fi, because it's such a down to earth movie.
Yes.
And even though you got this robot guy in there, you don't think of it as hardcore sci-fi, which it is, or even cyberpunk, because we don't have a lot of the cyberpunk elements that we would normally associate.
Yeah, I mean, if this got like a Deus Ex makeover, I never asked for this. I don't know if we've got a drop for that. It's been a while since I
mentioned. Oh yeah, we haven't used it in almost 30 episodes.
Woo, okay, well it's coming back.
I never asked for this.
So what makes Deus Ex really interesting is a lot of honeycomb patterning, a lot of yellow.
Mm-hmm.
It has this very distinct, well, especially each game takes place in a different place. Dubai, Croatia, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've played them.
Prague, I think it is. And yeah, so you've got these unusual cultural backdrops, but then you also have, in terms of the graphics, an unusual color palette. And yeah, like it's not that hard. It's not like you have to throw everything out. You can't have sleek and futuristic. You can do sleek and futuristic, but there's different ways to approach the same solution.
I just had a bad brain thing, and I just realized, oh dear god, as a sci-fi movie, Bloodshot is better designed than 2014 RoboCop.
Yeah, actually, from memory, yeah.
It's not a badly designed film. It it's a bit shit, but...
Yeah. Tron Legacy is probably... I would hold that up as top-tier modern science fiction look that isn't recycling something. So, yeah, Deus Ex, Tron. That's that. Look at them. Take inspiration.
Funny thing about Tron is that they basically took the original aesthetic and just revamped it in a really interesting way.
Maybe that's the key. You look at things from the past and then make it futuristic. Like, I would really love to do, I mean, not literally remaking Metropolis, but aesthetically making a movie that takes place in a utopian future that is very much Art Deco.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be really attractive. And, you know, you got all these futuristic flying cars or electric cars, but they look like, you know, old 1940s, 50s cars.
This is why people have been wanting a Bioshock movie so long.
Clearly, yes.
Rapture, even though it's set in the past...
I was going to ask, like, I think it's in the past. So.
Future retro. And
retrofuturism, yeah.
Yeah, we had retrofuturism. And so you get all these lovely old aesthetics, but then you add like a newer elements to them, and it just inspires the brain. I don't think Bioshock works as a movie, though, because... What makes Bioshock really interesting is...
It's about the interacting, yeah.
Yeah, is literally about the concepts of, you know, what is a man? You know, all that type of stuff and the old...
Would you kindly?
Oh, I love that
thing. Yeah, I got the remastered one. I got to play him again.
Yeah, I've got the remasters on Steam.
But I'm playing the remasters of Metal Gear Solid. I just don't have enough time for games.
I've never played a Metal Gear Solid. No, the funny thing is, when I think of Would You Kindly, I always think back... Have you ever seen the web series Hey Ash, What You Playing?
No.
I'll have to get the Bioshock one for that. I'll send it to you. It's fucking hilarious.
But... actually, Detroit Become Human. Even though it's not the best game in the world, I'll freely admit that. Visually... Wow, it doesn't look like anything else. The graphics and the graphic design elements of it, you know, they use the blue triangles. There's very distinct. It's fabric prints. That's what makes it look so unique, is all the textures on the costumes and these diamond patterns and whatever. So it really doesn't take too much to make something look distinctly futuristic, but it's got to be uniform. So, you know, when you go into the Detroit Become Human world, or Deus Ex, or Bioshock, there's something about the color palette, or the graphic design, or whatever, that fonts even, that gives it that distinct feel. RoboCop, the remake, is completely generic.
The blandest, bland of blandy, bland, 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 bland. I'm just going to keep repeating bland till we finish this, I think, so we should wrap this up.
I think that bland about covers it. So, where can we find you, Simon?
Oh, we swapped this around, bland. You can find me on Fandom Crossing, where I do things like Kung Pao Enter the Minute. But I've been doing a lot of photography stuff. Go check that out on Helios Photos on the Facebook. So I'm going to try and do more social media-y things with that. But at some point, we'll figure it out. But more importantly, where...
Promote.
Where can we find you?
You can find me at TravianDesigns.com or patreon.com/TravianDesigns. That's where you'll get advanced episodes of Covenant Minute, Tron Legacy Minute, and Blade Runner Minute, and...
All the minutes.
My neighbor's yelling, and I got scared because I thought someone was going to try and bust in and murder me. I'm Courtney Coulson. This is my last will and testament. Please don't...
Don't worry, I'll make sure this recording goes onto the proper authorities if you...
Yeah, if I die. But yeah, so...
That got dark!
Yeah, I guess... I was recently on the Airwolf Years podcast, and it's really good. I like Airwolf more than I expected to, so my episode is called He Frowned His Frostbite Off. I said that was what I said, and you'll find the context in that episode.
So check us out on Simplecast, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and we're on YouTube, on all the other shit. Like, share, subscribe, feed the algorithm. The algorithm is Lord, even though it is bland. And
until next time,
bland Robocock, bland, 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 bland. Robo bland. That's his new name.
Yes.